It's every election ever and beer. And it's our series finale here on Every Election Ever and Beer.
That was a real crack.
That was a real crack. That sounded fantastic.
It did.
Gentlemen, I toast you.
How are we going to end this thing? Are we just going to like fade to black like The Sopranos?
Oh, I was thinking having a real funky cliffhanger like Seinfeld.
Yeah, we just all end up in jail.
Yes. Matt pees in the corner. We all get arrested.
Actually, I don't want to be in jail after everybody knows what I drink. I just want to avoid.
You could be somebody's girlfriend. You're going to be.
Avoid that altogether.
You can make some toilet cider in jail for everybody. Take the mashed apples off your tray.
Gross. I'm drinking the only thing that Scott Moore can drink on the series finale of Every Election Ever in Beer. I'm drinking a Miller Lite tonight. but I did have cracked open a White Rascal Belgian style white ale, which is very good, from Avery Brewing Company where's this from? Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, there you go.
It's very good. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Colorado beers. There's no connection to the election that we're covering today with Colorado, other than it's going to go blue again, in my opinion. And it was in your, I stole it from your refrigerator, Matt.
There is no way to end, though, for you but to come full circle, because one of the best moments of the show was the first show where you talked about and actually unveiled the real reason why Washington crossed the Delaware. And it had nothing to do with the revolution. It was a coincidence. It had everything to do with a beer run for more Miller Lite.
That's right.
He had to get some Miller Lite. That was my favorite moment of the whole show. We peaked way too early.
We did. The first show.
There were a lot of favorite moments that I had to cut out that the other people would not enjoy.
not surprised by that one bit. Eddie, what are you drinking tonight?
My wife bought. This is a $45 bottle of grape mead.
Ooh.
And it was not a large bottle. It was not a large bottle. It's about one glass of beer.
But is it very fizzy, almost like a Shasta?
Oh no, not at all.
So it's like flat Shasta.
It's like wine.
Oh no. No bueno. That's that stuff's got too much. What is it? It's got too much sugar in it. It gives me awful headaches. The real fruity stuff.
Oh,
can't
yeah.
do it.
No, I'm good with
cannot
that.
Cannot do it. I know you can do it like crazy.
Absolutely.
You butt chug it.
Matt would really like this beer since it's barely beer at all.
I bet I would. I am drinking something from Unveiled Brewing Company. Because everything will be unveiled tonight.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
By Eddie Zipper.
Yeah.
But also, it's out of California, which is a state that is not relevant to this election whatsoever.
I think it's going to go blue.
Boy, kudos for sticking your neck out there.
It is a strawberry strawberry Bock, though.
Okay.
So, should be delicious.
So, we have done over 200 years... Oh, nice crack.
I know.
Over 200 years of reviews and analysis of presidential elections in America. And I can tell you, I think I've said this before on another series, I've learned more in this particular podcast through these 200 years, these 44 elections, than I have learned in most of my college history classes, bar none.
I agree with
that. So you're ready for the quiz then?
God, no. Are you
we
kidding
me? We are not
me?
Ready to take a quiz.
Not ready at all. Actually, it's a really good idea for a follow-up show is to do a quiz.
Yeah, but I can tell you from manning our Twitter that the people that listen to the show, especially our loyal listeners,
yeah.
know way more about what we've said than you and I do. I promise you.
I'd like to remind them it's because we're drinking, okay?
That's only partially the reason.
We're drinking and we're quite dim-witted, and we only look remotely smart because we edit the crap out of this.
Absolutely, and we're also trying to wiki search everything while Eddie talks.
That's right. And if that wiki guy's wrong, then I look even dumber.
Yeah, we We edit that out unless it's Scott, and then it stays in.
Yeah. All right, so we went through 200 years of these elections. We've had a lot of fun, learned a crap load of information that we didn't know prior to getting involved in this podcast. Eddie Zipper is the champion of all champions when it comes to history of American elections, particularly presidential elections. Where do you want to start? I mean, obviously, there's maybe some time of reflection, maybe, but we need to get into our crystal ball moment of, you know, this is going to be posted on Election Day 2020, which is the most important election
ever. Yeah,
and we've said that 100 times. But I'll start it off, and I'll ask Matt Webb, do you think this is the most important election ever?
It's so cliche.
You're going to fall into the cliche thing.
I
set the trap.
Yeah, I don't remember an election this contentious. And again, obviously in my lifetime, there have been more contentious elections. But I think I said on Twitter, if Donald Trump wins this election, we will know it in 4 years, basically. I mean, if he happens to get the majority electoral college, he's not going to be able to govern for 4 years again. I mean, they're going to protest this forever. I just don't feel like there's ever there's going to be problems no matter who wins this election. I feel like it's the contentiousness is just not going to end once a winner's decided. And that's,
do you think that the in this particular case, the resistance, if you will, a little bit more organized this go around, way better funded than ever before, that's an issue, right?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that. I think you have so many things in play to say that this is not going to be over, obviously, on Election Day, and maybe for a good time after that, even though I think the states are trying to pull their stuff together. But yeah, I'm going to be cliche and say in my lifetime, it's probably the most definitive election that I've ever seen, just because of how far apart the parties seem to be. There are no Bill Clintons. There are no George Bushes. There are only, you know, Joe Biden, who is a surrogate for people really wanting to push the party left. And you have Donald Trump, who is, you know, he's definitely not a moderate.
Eddie Zipper, your answer. This is the most important election ever.
You know, I don't think that I would say that Donald Trump isn't a moderate. I actually think that Donald Trump is a moderate. I think maybe there's a few issues where he's, you know, pretty far right, but only a few. I think mostly that he's a moderate. I think that's why he won.
Hold on, let me ask a question. Did I use the term moderate? Because I misspoke if I did. Because what I meant is he is not somebody that's going to bring both sides together. And I think those are different. I agree with Eddie that he's not a traditional conservative, because I think you could be a conservative and still actually be like a likable personality to the other side.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe what you're trying to say is he's a populist by his actions, but he's not a popular populist.
He's not going to bring, as somebody who is a moderate, he's not going to bring a lot of votes over from Democrats who typically vote Democrat but say, hey, this party is too left for me.
I don't. No.
Yeah.
I don't know, Matt.
Maybe that's the surprise.
And that may be the surprise. That may be something that we want to discuss later on in the show.
Probably.
Because I have an opinion on this based on where we've seen the president in the past couple of days.
Yeah.
That's very telltale compared when you lay that over where he spent his last few days in 2016.
Yeah. I feel like Eddie probably has a really good layout for where we should be going in this show.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are we stepping on stuff, man?
Oh, no, it's good. I figured we could just talk about stuff. I was going to answer Scott's question and say that, no, I do not believe this is the most important election of all time. I believe that the most important election of all time was the election of 1860.
Oh, okay.
Won by Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah. That's strong.
We all know that Donald Trump is the second best president ever to Abraham Lincoln. He made that pretty clear.
Well,
in the
debate. Said that in debate, so we have to believe it. I'll answer my own question. I do not think that this is the most important election ever. I think that this is the soup du jour. I think this is the most this may end up being one of the most expensive elections ever. This may end up being one of the most watched elections ever globally. But I think when it all comes down to the results, I think it's going to pan out to say, no, I don't think so. I don't think there is. If it was the most important election ever, it would be more divided.
Do you know why it's one of the most important to look at ever? I really think that were the press not the way they are now, and I know they've always been partisan.
Yes.
Were social media not the way it is now, and were Donald Trump not the person that he is, this election shouldn't even be close, I don't think.
What I think has happened with the press, and this is an aside, you can edit this out if you want to, but I think it's actually relevant. Social media has always been a back pocket Trump card, no pun intended, for the conservative right. If you look at the conservatives being able to play through social media, they did it with ninja status in 16. So much so that it caught the Democrats off guard. And they spent a lot of the 4 years between the two presidential elections playing catch up.
Oh, I agree with that.
And now that they're in this particular election, I think what you're seeing is with a lot of the examples of doxing, a lot of the censorship that you're seeing from Twitter and from Facebook, you're simply seeing that big tech, i.e. social media, has caught up to mainstream media's effectiveness in really controlling the narrative. Because 4 years ago, Twitter was really the Wild West. I mean, I know that seems hard to believe in retrospect, but it kind of was. It was a brand new medium. People didn't know how popular it was until it bit him in the ass and Donald Trump gets elected because he used it.
Yeah.
And when they finally figured it out, they said, we've got to combat this and either play a better card or censor.
What you said is relevant, and it's actually something that Eddie was going to address, and I made a comment on the last show, and I said, I think the difference in 16 and 20, and I felt in 16 that Trump had a real chance because of what I was seeing on social media. But I think...
Then you must feel great about his chances this
year.
Well,
here's what I've said, though. I think the press and the folks that control social media are not caught off guard this time like they were in 16.
You did make that point very quickly.
They are taking
it
to the
clearly.
Very end. They're going to play it all the way to the end.
And they're not giving...
And I, it seems like up. They're shutting down more and more as we get closer and closer to election time. But Eddie had a counterpoint to that he wanted to make, and he was waiting for this show.
Wow, I do not remember that.
Okay. No, no, no.
Sorry.
I don't remember at all.
My point was this. My point was the polls were, everybody says the polls were wrong in 16 and they're right now. But my point was that.
First off, I don't believe that one bit.
Yeah, but my point was you also have, you're not going to have the Democrats. They're not going to take for granted the fact that they're going to win this one anymore. I mean, you had Hillary up by 12 points or 10 points?
On election day.
They know now. They do not think it's in the bag now, even with the Biden lead in the polls and everything else. They are going to put the pedal down until the very end on Donald Trump. They're going to put their foot on his throat. Every story they're going to bury that's pro-Trump, every story that's pro-Biden, they're going to run with. That's how
it's happening. The only rebuttal, and I'll give the microphone to Eddie to explain his. So don't forget what you're about to say, Eddie. I will say this before I forget it. They have not only not put their foot on Donald Trump's throat, they have missed horribly on this. All you need to do, acquiesce and look at the pictures and the video of these rallies that are happening in mega important swing states.
Yeah, but
tens of thousands of people are freezing their ass off in Ohio and Pennsylvania to see him for 20 minutes.
That's an argument
on a tarmac.
That's an argument as to whether it's effective or not. But the fact that they're actually trying to do it, they're not going to let up.
A point taken. Right. Very good point. Very good point taken. But yes, they are. They're still trying it. They're not going to give up. It's going to be a really interesting political science conversation to have 4 years, 2 years from now of whether their efforts were successful or not.
Yeah.
Eddie, you had a point you wanted to make.
This may shock some people, but President Trump can win this election without the polls even being wrong, which is how little people understand the polls. Everybody thinks that if Donald Trump wins on Tuesday or whenever we're going to know the results, people think if Donald Trump wins, that means the polls were terribly, terribly off. But actually, Donald Trump could win this election without the polls being wrong.
That's a really good point that no one's talking
about. Let me ask you a question. Are you talking about, so are you differentiating at all between national polls and state polls, or are you about to get to that point?
It's part of it. He's going to explain.
Yeah.
I'm not differentiating between national and state. Ooh. He can win with the national polls not being wrong, and he can win with the state polls not being wrong. And the reason is because people don't actually understand what the polls measure, and the reason that they don't understand that is because the media doesn't know how the polls work, and they cover them all wrong. They, if someone is a political scientist, the media covering the polls sounds completely foolish to them. So here's what a poll says. Say you have a poll, and it says Biden is at 47, and Trump is at 43.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Biden plus four, right?
Yep.
But let's say that this poll, with Biden at 47 and Trump at 43, has a margin of error of 4 points.
Yeah.
Plus or minus 4 points. So people think that means, okay, well, it might be, you know, the poll had Biden plus four. There's a 4 point margin of error. That means that it could be tied or Biden could be up by eight. But that's actually not what that margin of error means. That margin of error means that you have to apply it to both. So it means that Biden could be at 51 and Trump could be at 39, which is Biden plus 12. Or it could mean that Biden is at 43 and Trump is at 47, which is Trump plus 4.
Wow.
So there's actually a 16-point range on that poll. And so what this poll actually says, and the media just reports it, Biden is up by four right now. That's not how it works. They often say the polls are a snapshot in time. They're not a snapshot at all. What the poll says, this fake poll that I made up, says that there is a 95% chance if there is no inherent error in the poll, if there is no bias affecting the poll outside of just the normal sample bias, then there's a 95% chance that the range is somewhere from Biden plus 12 to Trump plus 4. That's what was in that one poll, and that's all it told you.
Wow. Then why is it not reported that way, in your opinion, as a political scientist? And why is the media, with such pride, such authority, whatever term you want to put to it, are they going in front of the cameras, in front of the lights every single night, pounding their chests and saying, there's no way, it's over?
You know, I believe that they report it like that because they don't even know. I believe that they don't even know, and I think that most of the polls show Biden ahead, so they like it, so why even look into that?
Kills their narrative, kills the way they want to report the news. That's an amazing point that has yet to be talked about, of course, on this show, but Matt Webb, you're a news junkie just like I am. Do you read anything like that in the mainstream media? Do you watch any explanation like that? I mean, that was so eloquently put by Eddie, and it makes so much sense. I mean,
very few people who, you know, don't really dig into this stuff and follow it would even sit to listen to an explanation like that. And it's all about getting clicks.
Yep.
And they're not gonna, polls are not sexy enough to get clicks in the first place, especially breaking down how a poll is conducted, you know?
We are in such a headline-driven,
yeah,
how much soda can I sell with this click,
yeah,
you know, culture, that it's really it's really not fair. I mean, what is fair? But it's really not fair to the pedestrian watcher, because there is going to be a set of people that wake up on Wednesday morning, if it happens like it has for you know, many years, and it's going to be just completely thrown off by what the headline they see.
Yeah. Here's the other thing that I would say to that is, you know, as someone who's presented facts and arguments in court, right, you're going to present what you see as a fact, even if it doesn't, even if presenting the context doesn't help you. You're just going to present the fact and not the context. And I think it would be hard-pressed to say right now that almost every media outlet doesn't probably lean one way or the other.
It's right? true. It's true.
So if I'm CNN, for example, and I see a poll where Biden is leading by 4 points, it doesn't behoove me to explain that that could actually mean Biden's behind by 2 points. There's no reason I should explain that to people, because the point I want to make to people who are going to go out and vote is, if you're voting for Biden, you know, he's a winner. Go cast your vote for him. And the other side, if you're going to vote for Trump, you shouldn't show up because he's going to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point they're trying to make in the headline.
The one thing that I learned in college, took a class, one of my last classes in communication, really, really difficult subject matter here, communications.
Yeah.
Being
it is hard for you. Yeah.
It was a conversation about the fine print of polls, that if you read the result of 50% said yes, 50% said no, and make any assumption from that without knowing a few other details is asinine.
Yeah.
It's just the most ludicrous thing that you can do with your spare time.
To rely on that, I got you.
You have to find out what that sample looks like. And really, you need to know other details like sample size, sample geography, the dates of which these polls were taken, all of these. And the professor that I had was very good about it. He was a raging liberal. It wasn't a political, overly political time in America's history. But he made the point that, for example, there are polls that can be paid for to target certain samples during certain hours of the day, that they know exactly the outcome that's going to come.
Yeah.
Because typically, who answers the phone during the day? People who don't have jobs and people who are retired.
Right.
Which means that there are certain...
Or...
People who work at night.
Yeah. People in blue states who are quarantined.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. So there are ways that you could almost pay for the result that you want to get. Now, there is a lot of people out there. There are pundits out there from the right that, you know, we see them, you know, as these fleeting headlines that pop up and say, this is just an opportunity, or sorry, not an opportunity. This is the Democrats trying to throw shade on and quell the results that that Republicans are trying to achieve. They're trying to pat down voter turnout.
Yeah.
Trying to really throw a cold towel on voter turnout, which really hasn't been qualified in my opinion. Eddie, you may have some examples of times where they've been able to achieve significant voter turnout, you know, going from really hot and heavy for a candidate, but then for months and months and months, they put up these awful results from polls, and it was finally decided, no, I don't need to go and vote for this guy. He's going to get skunked. But I don't think that's an overly successful strategy that anybody's ever put to play and been successful with.
You know, I don't think that people care about the polls. I was looking at, I remember in 2016, the Upshot, which does, they do data for the New York Times. It's called the Upshot. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but they took hypothetical polling data, and they gave it to different pollsters, and they said, okay, here's the polling data, deliver the results. And they ranged from Hillary Clinton +4 to Trump +1. And wow. It was the same data. And the reason is because they weight it different. Each pollster has their own way of weighting the polls. And when you weight them, you really, I mean, you can make it say what you want it to say. Now, presumably, they want it to be right. Although I don't know if they do or not, to be honest. But presumably, if you're a pollster, then there's nothing to be gained in any way by you except to have a poll that is right. But you can get the result that you want by deciding how you're going to weight that poll. I mean, those different pollsters all had the exact same data, and they ranged from Clinton plus four to Trump plus one just based on how they weighted them.
Yeah. Switching topics a little bit, the one area that I think is not really collected, the information that's not really collected all that well in polls in this particular election is this. You're trying to find out the public's opinion on a political figure in Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. What it's failing to capture is the fact that Donald Trump is not a political figure. He's only a political figure because the fact that he is a nominated presidential candidate for the Republican Party. More than anything, he's a cultural character. To me, he fits more squarely into, although their politics are nowhere near the same, he's very similar to a Teddy Roosevelt. So where Joe Biden is running against Donald Trump, he's not just running against policy decisions of a Donald Trump. He is running against someone that is not likable as a human being, but loved as a cultural character. Does that make sense? And I think the perfect example of that is last week's Saturday Night Live spoof that says, hey, listen, we all hate Donald Trump, but what the hell are we going to talk about after he's gone? I have friends that the only thing we have in common is our hatred of Donald Trump. And it was hilarious because it was true. That is, to me, a prime example of a cultural character. And when you put the two together, or two against each other, I should say, it is apples and oranges. The Democrats are trying to defeat Donald Trump as if it was in a political forum. It's not. It's in a cultural forum. And Donald Trump is going to wax their ass because of that particular fact. Now, to me, that's why he won in 16. I think 2020, I think it's probably going to be a little closer than everybody feels comfortable admitting. And we'll get into that later. But to me, that's the big problem in these polls. The media's attention is they're trying to play a political game with someone that is so much bigger than politics. It's a cultural thing.
I thought maybe we could start getting into talking about some predictions here. And
let's do it.
There's this line from Top Gun where Tom Skerritt is talking to all the pilots, and he says that during Vietnam, the pilots became too reliant upon missiles, and they lost their dogfighting skills, and they started to lose more planes because of that. And I think that's what polling is like. I think people lose their analytical skills when it comes to elections because the polls are doing it for them. And so they just say, well, whatever the polls say, that's my opinion. And that's just real lazy. And I thought, how would we analyze this election? How would we attempt to predict it? What variables would we look at if there was no such thing as polls? So I'm going to make my prediction today pretending that there is no such thing as polls.
Okay, I'll kick it off. because I am the dim-witted one of the three of us. Here is my election results. This is what, in my opinion, what you're going to see on election night. I am predicting a Donald Trump win. I think the spread, as far as electoral votes, is going to be somewhere in this range. I think it's going to be in the 270s, of course, 272-ish, all the way up to about 300.
Which, by the way, you've vacillated back and forth. I have as well.
Yes.
But there were times when you thought Donald Trump has no chance of winning.
Actually, at one point I said it would take the hand of God.
You actually told me that. That's why I'm saying that.
Yes.
Because, in fairness,
absolutely.
I think it's fair that people have gone back and forth in the past week.
It's also fair to our listeners to know that, I'm not considering myself an expert, but I am addicted to politics. I've been addicted to politics for years.
Right.
And there's not much that goes on that I'm not pretty aware of and have a really well-read opinion on. I have gone back and forth in this.
Right.
But I think it's going to – I think here's what my take is. And this is an overarching theme. A lot of people are going to disagree with this. America is slow to change. America, in a lot of ways, is like parallel parking a battleship. I don't see a terrible amount of difference culturally and politically between 2016 and 2020. I don't see that. That's the first point. The second point is there are states that a tremendous amount of wave is going to have to wash over these people to change the margins that Trump won in 16. I don't necessarily think that we're seeing that based on the crowds that we're seeing that have trickled in via Twitter.
Yeah.
That's there. So of the ones that are of interest, there's this thing called the Trump wall, and everyone out there knows about the Trump wall. It's Michigan, it's Wisconsin, Ohio, and Pennsylvania.
Whoa. I thought the Trump wall was Mexico.
Well, yes, absolutely. here's my take on it. I think in my gut, and I love following my gut, it's going to be 284. That's the number.
Okay.
I think he
loses. So less than last time.
Yeah, I think he loses a very close race in Michigan, Trump. I think he loses by a pretty large margin in Wisconsin. I think he wins pretty handily in Ohio. I think he wins pretty handily in PA.
Wow.
I also think that he wins this time. I think he flips Nevada. And I think that New Mexico, in my opinion, and I was telling some friends of mine earlier today, the reason I give it such a wide range is this. There are a couple states I want people to take note of, in my opinion. Nevada, New Mexico, Michigan, and PA. Wisconsin, I think, is gone. I think Wisconsin is blue. The reason I think New Mexico is this, it comes down to numbers, and it comes down to the differences of 16 to 20. In New Mexico, in 2016, who was on the ballot? It was Clinton and it was Trump, but it was also a guy named Gary Johnson, who was the former governor of New Mexico. The spread was about 55,000 votes in New Mexico in 16. Gary Johnson got 75,000 votes, or thereabouts, in 2016. You take Gary Johnson out of the picture, you put a weaker, there may be some people out there that disagree, but you put a weaker libertarian character in the libertarian seat in Joe Jorgensen.
Not from New Mexico, by the way.
Not from New Mexico. And yeah. A female. That may sound sexist, but I don't care. Because libertarians love men as their candidates. You know what? You can hate me if you want to. You can post it on Twitter. I don't give a shit. Sorry. Because I don't listen to you. I don't read Twitter. They love Republican men. Sorry, they love men. That's a big difference. Another thing is this. Last time, there was not a Green Party candidate. Yeah. This time there's a Green Party candidate. So circle on your calendar, New Mexico. I think it goes red. One that could possibly go red is Nevada. The reason I think it could possibly go red is, for some reason, if you look where Donald Trump has spent the final days of his candidacy,
right?
Because this is big time. This is where do you spend your last moments as a presidential candidate? All the chips are on the table. Where are you going to visit? I saw he's in Nevada.
Yeah. If you're Hillary, you go to New York or California.
What are you doing in Nevada? only if you look back to 2016 and you say, what the hell's he doing in Michigan?
Yep.
What's Trump doing in Michigan? He's wasting his time.
Or Wisconsin or Minnesota.
What happened in Michigan in 16?
Yeah, he flipped it.
He flipped it. Yeah. That's exactly right. There are things in these high levels of these campaigns where people are looking at micro, nano existence of voter turnout and saying, if we can generate this type of turnout, we're going to win that state.
Yeah.
You need to get your ass to Michigan. He did. He flips the state. Same thing happened in Nevada, right? If you look at PA and Ohio, he's been spending so much time in PA, Nevada, PA, Ohio, Florida, Arizona. He's got tens of thousands of people showing up. He's got his supporters stalking Joe Biden's campaign. Here's my point before I hand it over to you. There are places that Donald Trump has been, and he has spoken to tens of thousands of people that will stand in line, freeze their ass off to stand on a tarmac to listen to the president for 15, 20 minutes, and they are as happy as a pig in poop to do so. And you still see Joe Biden and Kamala Harris getting in front of 15 people to sit inside of a circle that's been pre-marked, or sit in their car and honk their horn. There is an excitement on the right that does not exist right now on the left.
Yeah.
They can blame on COVID all they want to, but these people don't care. These Republicans don't care. I think it goes anywhere from 272 all the way to 305. I think we know on Election Day.
Yeah.
I think we know on Election Day because there's too much of a gap between. That won't matter.
Yeah, I got you. Cool. Every time I think about these rallies and see the Biden-Kamala rallies on TV and see these circles around the chairs and all that stuff, it's some like weird hybrid, maybe Purge version of a game of yard darts or like croquet. They're sitting inside the circle where I'm supposed to throw the yard dart or something. I don't know. Here's one thing that I'll say, and I'm going to talk about themes, I guess, and things that it's all gut feel for me too, because I'm looking at the polls. I didn't feel like the polls were accurate last time around just because of the feeling of things. And I'm seeing,
attest to that.
I'm seeing the same things you are. I'm seeing the rallies are unbelievably huge.
They seem bigger than last time.
That just doesn't make sense to me. And here's a few things that I think are moving people towards a possible Trump win when nobody in the polls and the media won't expect it again, and the people that are inside the bubble in D.C. I think we're seeing another possible law and order election, and we've talked about those.
Yeah.
I think it's a chance for the media to call all these Trump voters racist again because of the Black Lives Matter movement. But in reality, I think you have a lot of people who would not vocally say they support Trump on Facebook, Twitter, in church, to their neighbors. But they're sitting at home, and they're seeing riots, and they're seeing all this talk about how bad police officers are. And they know police officers. They've worked with police officers. They know families of police officers.
Yeah.
They know we can't defund the police. They're also scared of these riots. They're seeing them going on in these cities. And I think they're going to, at the end of the day, partially vote on fear of those things happening and continuing to happen.
Just let me cut in for one sec. Do you remember when we talked about the Nixon election? And we learned that the average American voter, according to Richard Nixon's strategy, was a woman in Ohio whose brother-in-law is a police officer.
I'm telling you, I think that's
huge. Do you
remember
that?
Yeah, I think that's huge. I really do. And I think that's going to be huge in swing states. And here's the other thing that I think you couple with this. And Eddie mentioned it when he sort of alluded to it when he talked about the people being polled or people sitting at home in these states where they're, you know, they can't go out for coronavirus. But you have states like North Carolina, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, where because of their mayors or their governors or whoever, they're more strict than places like Georgia and Tennessee coronavirus.
Oh, yes.
And I think
the fatigue.
There is huge coronavirus fatigue. And I think people are standing in line 6 feet apart, waiting forever with mask on. And even sitting in line, they're like, I'm tired of this shit, man.
Yeah.
And I get it.
Yeah.
Everybody understands that coronavirus can be deadly and all this other kind of stuff.
It is.
But when it becomes the focus of both debates, and that was all it is, and we didn't get to talk about anything else, I think people are so tired of being preached to about how how they're doing everything wrong to protect themselves from coronavirus.
Yes.
That they're almost going to – that's another reason they're going to vote for Trump.
I'll tell you one thing. This – it could actually win the election, in my opinion, for Trump, because if you circle Michigan.
Yeah.
Michigan has been the primary state of – reopen their economy versus not opening the state.
You have a villain in the governor there for people who are pro opening the state back up.
And there's a lot of shy supporters in the state of Michigan that have, they may not be huge supporters of the president, but they are tired. They are tired of being shut down. And at this point, they feel that the only way they're going to open back up is if someone finally says, you're opening back up.
Yeah.
Okay, this kills 0.1. This kills less than half of a percent of us.
Yeah. So I have two more reasons why I think, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to go ahead and tell you that I'm leaning towards Trump winning and a map being very similar to what it was last time, with the exception of he maybe loses Wisconsin, he maybe even loses Michigan and can still win.
Yes.
But here's the other two things that I think are in play, and they're both having to do with the voters. Number one, I mentioned this. I think voter registration. The Republicans have tried to ramp that up, and I think a lot of people are concerned this time around, and their registration may have expired. They never really cared about politics before. But because it's a law and order election, and because of coronavirus, you would think, okay, those two things are going to motivate people to go register no matter who they're voting for.
Yes.
If you look across the board in swing states, Eddie's right. If everybody came out and voted that's registered, for the most part, they're higher Democrat than Republican in those swing states. But if you look at the change in almost every state across the board, Pennsylvania, registered Democrats, -1.5%, registered Republicans, 3.7% plus.
Yes.
Florida, there's a net change of 9.6 to Republicans to 5.8 to Democrats. Arizona, that's the exception. There are more Democrats registered. North Carolina, more Republicans registering. So my thing is, if people are pushed to come out and vote this time and they're saying, hey, go register and really make your voice heard this time. You've never been heard before. And I've heard from a lot of people who said, hey, where do you even go vote? Like, I've never really done that before, but I care about it.
Yeah.
People are thinking that they're going to register because they hate Trump. And I think they're so off. They're just as off in thinking about last time that Hillary was the personality that people would gravitate to because of her experience. And they were so wrong about how everybody felt about Hillary. I think they're really wrong about why people are going to register this time. And it has nothing to do with Trump's personality and wanting to get rid of him, and everything to do with corona fatigue, political correctness fatigue, and law and order. I think it has everything to do with that. I think it's going to tip the scales just enough for Trump to hold on, and there's going to be a complete meltdown because, again, like you said, I'm going to give credit to you. The biggest mistake that the media and the Democrats are making now is they were going to refuse to learn anything from 2016.
That's exactly right.
And change.
And that's what brought me back to my senses of up until a week ago. Last Monday, my wife looks over to me and says, why are you so down? I said, Donald Trump's going to get his ass kicked. And to be honest with you, that I don't like the way that feels.
Yeah.
And I told you, I was texting back and forth to you, and you said something that wasn't rah-rah, you know, pick yourself up. It was more like you need to check where you've been before on this opinion. And you were right, because what I've always said is the Democrats will not win the presidency again until they learn the lessons of why they lost the last time.
Yeah.
And it's almost this kid in the middle aisle of a Walmart kicking and screaming because he wants that toy. He's not listened. He's not learned of why he didn't get the toy last time.
Yeah.
So he's not going to win it this time either.
Yeah. They're relying too much, I think, on the fact that everybody hates Trump as much as they do.
And it's not true. Again,
yeah.
It's a political thing versus a cultural thing.
Yeah.
Trump is cultural. Biden is political. Now, I'll tell you this. Before we hand it over to the one everyone wants to hear about is Eddie, because he's the real expert here. Although my gut says this is going to be in that 272 to 305 range, there is something in the back of my mind. I don't know what it is, and I can't get it. I can't scrub it out of my mind that says we could possibly see a Reagan map on this. And the reason I say that is because there is a lot of people in Wisconsin, in Michigan, and in Minnesota that don't live anywhere near the urban areas, but they hate what was done in these riots. The same thing is going to push these people to the polls. It could you could very easily see a 330 total or a 330-ish total from Donald Trump.
So let's be clear. We're not talking Reagan-Mondale map.
No.
Okay.
I'm talking a big red map.
Right.
That would be like, holy crap, we haven't seen this since Reagan.
Yeah. Should we turn it over to Eddie?
Eddie, you got it.
Tell us why we're wrong.
Yeah. Eddie, why we're wrong and who's actually going to win.
Here's what I did. I did my analysis without polls because I think that polls are they're an interesting thing to look at, but I think that people get sucked into them. I think that they're more about creating public opinion than they are about measuring public opinion. I don't think anybody has any sort of virtuous interest in the polls. I think that people are only interested in making the polls say what they want to say. They're interested in the polls backing up what they want to happen. So forget it. I'm not doing the polls. I'm going to do all my analysis based on other things. Maybe this will go very badly for me and no one will ever do that again. Maybe I'll get it right and people will say, you know what? Maybe there are ways to divine this without looking at the polls. I can tell you this. If we look back at the 2012 election, if you look at the last 35 national polls taken, well, first let me say President Obama won re-election by 4 points. If you look at the last 35 polls taken, you know how many of them showed Obama up by 4 points or more?
How many?
One. Wow. One. One poll of the last 35 showed Obama up by 4 points or more, even though he won by 4 points. So what's that about? Well, that's about enthusiasm, because it's one thing to get a phone call and tell somebody you're going to vote for Mitt Romney. It's another thing to wait an hour in a line, to take time out of your day, to go through the trouble of voting for Mitt Romney when you know that it's just one vote. See, people think all the time, it's just one vote. It doesn't matter if I go. They don't know that they're representative, that if they don't go, a million people won't go. And that's just what it is. It's a story of enthusiasm. And when I look at the story, so I'm going to use enthusiasm as my first measure, but I don't have any polls to measure the enthusiasm. By the way, Trump's up in the enthusiasm question by like 40 in every poll. It's asinine. In the 2016 election, Clinton and Trump were tied in every poll in enthusiasm. They were both where Biden is now, but this time Trump is worlds ahead. But I'm going to not look at the polls. I'm going to look at the 96 miles of cars lined up for Trump in Arizona.
Yep.
96-mile-long line car. Did y'all see that?
I did.
That's unbelievable. 96 miles long. I'm going to look at these packed arenas. I'm going to look at the campaign itself. I'm going to look at Biden's campaign and Trump's. Trump huge energy out every day doing 3-4 rallies. He's hilarious. Everybody loves him. Everybody wants to go see him. Even people that don't even support him that much want to go see him because it's the experience of a lifetime. It's like that lady who wanted to go see Theodore Roosevelt so that she could see him smile in person. That was all she wanted to see. She listened to him talk for 3 hours because she wanted to see his toothy grin in person. I don't believe that you can win a presidential election running the campaign that Joe Biden won. I don't care what the polls say. I don't believe it. Nothing that we've talked about has made me believe that a person can do that. The closest thing we've ever seen is 1896.
Exactly.
When we saw
the Front Porch Campaign. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, the Front Porch Campaign. William McKinley. I just couldn't think of his name.
Yeah, it's McKinley. Mm-hmm.
William McKinley ran a front porch campaign, but he didn't call lids at 9 a.m. He stood on his front porch and he talked to big groups of people all day, every day. He stumped. What Biden did is unreal. I do not believe that you can do that and win a presidential election. I've never seen anything like it. Nobody has. Nobody's ever run an election like that in the history of the presidency. Nobody's ever run a campaign that did so little. It was like the day of the Mute Tribune where the candidate stayed at home and other people did the work.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I know I don't want to interrupt your point, but can you imagine like doing this election 12 years from now or, you know, 16 years from now, and us trying to decide if Biden wins, here are the defining moments that turn the tide for Biden that we want to play some clips for you. There are absolutely zero things that we could come up with to play.
I'm going to come up with an effective strategy to mobilize adrenaline and love and pressure.
Did you see that, by the way?
I went viral with that. Did y'all see my viral tweet?
He was trending number four on Twitter, his word.
I know.
The word that, you know, he made up. Actually, Biden made up, and he defined it or put it into.
Fantastic.
He spelled it.
I transcribed it.
Yeah, he spelled it.
I got a lot of likes on my Facebook repost of that from Eddie.
Yeah. But my point, I think you're exactly right. It's like, this is almost embarrassing to say that this person won the presidency, if that's what happens.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, it's very rare to see an incumbent lose, so this is my next piece of the puzzle.
Yes, the incumbent
Trump
backer.
Is an incumbent, so automatically I give him an edge.
It's like home field advantage, yeah.
Yeah, it really is. It's like a home field advantage. You know, during the whole thing, Trump is president of the United States, and people do take that into account. And there's an old Teddy Roosevelt quote, "It is not the critic who counts. It's the man in the arena whose face is marred by the blood and sweat and, you know, all that." I butchered that quote, but it's paraphrased, of course. Yeah, but people
you know
take
the thing.
That into account. They know that Biden, if he was president, it would not have been like, oh, you know, I'll stop COVID, and then COVID was gone. Everybody knows that Biden doesn't have a magic solution to COVID. He's been for and against his own national mask mandate, which is basically all he has, is a national mask mandate where everybody in the whole country is required to wear a mask, which, as far as I know, is basically happening now. But he's been for and against it so many times, it's crazy. It decides that it's unconstitutional. He decides it's constitutional. So I think that the power of incumbency will matter. Very few incumbent presidents in American history have been defeated, though the ones that were, it was because there was some kind of crisis during their presidency.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget about me yet.
Trump would fall into the category of incumbents who were defeated you know, because of a tragedy. So, you know, whether it's the stock market crashing, or that's actually usually what it is.
That's the,
right
there's
now
nothing.
It's a pandemic.
But right. But I mean, yeah, well, there pandemic.
There's that.
But still, I mean, he has done nothing policy wise to lose as an incumbent.
I tell you what, he's actually done. He's ran, if you extract his Twitter play, a remarkably clean presidency.
I mean, it's like
remarkably clean.
It's like the Golden Bear said. I tell him all the time to shut up on Twitter, but policy wise, you've got to set aside personality and realize what he's done for the country in 4 years. He's done what he said he's going to do.
He's done what he said he's going to do. He created the jobs. He created the economy. Doesn't matter who gets the credit for it at the end. It happened.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, you look at this guy and he's kept us out of conflicts.
Yeah. And he's
and
actually
brought some peace
to the Middle East that's not even getting any coverage.
Yeah.
That is like monumental peace negotiations.
Well.
That would be so covered in an Obama administration. I mean,
forget about it. But, okay, so here's my bottom line. I believe that people on the phone may say that they're going to vote for Biden. But I don't believe that they'll show up in those numbers. I don't believe that the polls will be wrong about what people on the phone said. I don't believe the polls are cooked or anything like that. I know that lots of people out there think that they purposely make the polls say that Trump is going to lose. I don't believe any of that. I believe that turnout will be in Trump's favor. I don't believe that all the people who went out and voted for Obama in 2008 or 2012, to a lesser extent, I don't believe that they're coming out for Joe Biden. I don't believe that for a single second. I don't believe that he's inspired one person in any meaningful way. You will never see a 96-mile line of cars in excitement about Joe Biden. It will not exist ever at any time. Biden's only argument is that he's not Trump. So I have one more thing here that I'm taking into account, since my analysis is not taking polls into account. So the last thing that I'm going to take into account here is the fact that I believe that it's a lot easier to support Donald Trump this time. I think that it's so much easier than it was last time. Last time, the biggest knock against Trump was that he had never held any public office before.
And that he used to be a
Democrat. Now he has held the highest public office that there is. He's been president of the United States now. He's a known quantity now, which is a really big deal to people, which is why the incumbents always win, even if the incumbents aren't particularly good.
Yeah.
People prefer a known quantity. I voted for Trump in 2016, and it was a very scary experience because I was venturing into the unknown. I'm not a big time risk taker.
Mm-hmm.
There were times during that election when I thought that I might vote for Hillary Clinton.
Wow.
Just because I couldn't be sure. This time, like, I'm really excited about Donald Trump. I like him. You know what I mean? Like,
I do. And I think this last point that you've brought up, I hate to say it speaks to me, but it really does. I didn't vote for Donald Trump the first time. In 16, I flew that yellow libertarian flag as if it were my child at a Little League baseball game. I voted for Gary Johnson almost as a a rebuke to the Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton campaigns as much of a as a push for a Gary Johnson presidency, knowing there was no way in hell Gary Johnson was going to get elected. It was a principle thing. I didn't know either. I didn't trust Hillary Clinton, and I didn't know Donald Trump well enough to give my what I thought the most important vote in the world, is the way I saw it. The only vote I can speak to is my own vote, to someone I did not know well enough. This year, in 2020, I know him. He is a known quantity. He is my horse to ride towards the type of country that I want to bequeath to my kids. And with that, I will happily vote for Donald Trump.
I believe that a lot of people feel that way. Here's something people might not remember about the 2016 election. Everyone will remember that during the 2016 election, CNN and MSNBC and all that, that they did not support Donald Trump. They hated him. Yep. They did not want him to become president. Everyone knows that. What people won't remember is that the conservative media hated Donald Trump.
Yep.
And they also gave him bad coverage, and they also hated him. Much of that has disappeared into the ether because, you know, those people are forgiven. But, I mean, if you go back far enough, do you remember National Review releasing their thing with all the editors' names on it? If you look back at that National Review cover and the names of all the editors against Donald Trump, you'll see some names of some pretty big Trump supporters on there. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to name them on the show because, you know, I don't want to embarrass anybody. I mean, I like all those people. I don't have a problem with them being against Trump back then, and I definitely don't have a problem with them being for Trump now. But entire websites like Red State, they had to fire everybody because everybody there hated Trump.
Wow.
And they had to fire everybody and replace them with people who liked Trump. There are a lot of media outlets that had to do that. Media outlets like the Weekly Standard, they're gone.
Yeah, you're right.
And all that is because a lot of these outlets were geared up to hate Donald Trump, and they couldn't sell it to Republicans. There wasn't even any Republicans out there to buy that because all the Republicans like Donald Trump, and they had to retool. The conservative media rebuilt itself to be for the new Republican Party.
That's a really strong point. Very strong
point. So Trump has the benefit of having conservative media this time, which he did not last time.
So Eddie Zipper, what is your prediction of the college? The electoral vote.
All right. Let me preface by saying once again that I did not take the polls into account. So if I am dead wrong and the polls are right, well, then you can assume that my analysis would have been different if I had looked at the polls. But I didn't. So here's my analysis. I have Donald Trump and Mike Pence winning the election with 321 electoral votes.
Wow.
Whoa, okay, so that's almost what I mentioned at the end, which could be a more second-term Ronald Reagan map. Not a readout, but pretty daggum close. So what states of mention should we keep our pen and circle for to watch to see if that 320 manifests itself?
All right, to win the 321, he has to win every state that he won in 2016.
Yeah.
So that's all the states that Republicans win, plus Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
Yes.
I also gave him Nevada and Minnesota.
Minnesota. Okay. What reason did you give Minnesota to him?
I believe that Trump is going to win everywhere that there were riots.
Very interesting take. And that was part of
my
reasoning.
I think that people see those riots close to them. Well, not everywhere. I mean, he's not going to win Washington. So not everywhere where there were riots, but places where it's close. I believe people having riots that close to their home.
Yeah.
I believe that they're going to vote for Donald Trump. Maybe they're not going to tell anybody, but I believe that they will. I believe that if you're a business owner, for instance, in Kenosha, I think you're going to go vote for Donald Trump. Yeah. I think you're going to say, you know, forget this. If I took the polls into account, that would not be the result. It would not be Trump 321, Biden 217. If I look at the polls and I take that into consideration, then I honestly have a very tough time seeing Trump make it to 270 based on the polls.
Yeah.
But I don't believe the polls.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't take them into account. I believe that they're already wrong in Florida. People are already seeing what's going on in Miami-Dade right now. And the turnout by Republicans there is just off the charts. And the people Biden needed to come out for him aren't coming out.
Yeah, I read that article today.
So I'm bringing you three analyses. Number one, I think that not taking the polls into account, Trump wins 321 to 217 on just pure straight-up enthusiasm, people showing up to the polls. I think the electorate is going to favor Trump when they weight the polls. Believe me, they don't assume the electorate is going to favor Trump.
Yeah.
So that's my number one analysis. My number two analysis is my the polls are correct analysis. I don't think that the polls are correct, but in my analysis that includes the polls, I say that Biden wins. Trump can't quite get to 270 in that situation. I think Trump will end up about 250 to 259 in that situation.
Okay.
My third analysis, I'm going to shake this magic eight ball and see if it's better at this than us. So, magic eight ball. Will Donald Trump win the 2020 election? You guys ready?
Let's do it.
Here it comes. This is probably the best analysis out of all of
probably.
Us. Probably. Says, better not tell you now.
Cliffhanger.
Oh, man.
Let me shake it up one more time. Will Donald Trump win the 2020 election?
We really better not tell you now. Could be riots.
The magic eight ball says don't count on it. So there's a chance that we could all be wrong and the magic eight ball will be right.
All right. What else we got?
All right. I got to ask the magic eight ball, are Republicans going to keep the Senate?
Ooh.
Magic eight ball says, my sources say no. This
God,
might be a really
this
bad
eight ball's
election.
Got Hillary Clinton in there, doesn't it? Listen to see if it coughs at you.
Magic eight ball, are Democrats going to keep the House? Are Democrats going to keep the House?
Just in case you weren't
it
listening.
It says, ask again later. I asked, are Democrats going to keep the House?
Technically, it's later.
Magic eight ball says, outlook good. So they say House,
this is a Democratic
Senate, and President all going to Democrats, according to the Magic 8-Ball.
Unbelievable.
So either way, on election night, we break that Magic 8-Ball.
It'll sure be sad if after all that work we did learning about every election ever, if the Magic 8-Ball beat us.
Yeah.
Guys, I'll leave with this. This has been probably the most unexpected, fun thing I've ever done in this hobby of podcasting that I have. We truly appreciate the friendship and just the fun we've had over the probably hundreds of hours we've talked now about, you know, politics and elections. But thank you, Eddie Zipper, for your expertise and Matt Webb, you're always good at putting in my place.
And also, obviously, thank you to everybody that's listened and started, you know, following us on Twitter and commenting and Facebook and just all the social media friends we've made just doing this podcast. We appreciate all of you guys and all the interactions. It's been awesome and fun, and we wish it could keep going in some ways, but we're also kind of glad it's over for a lot of
and we'll be
reasons.
Back. We'll be back.
But
got
we're
some
definitely
more ideas.
Coming back. You know, there's something in the works for sure. We're just going to take a little bit of a break so we all can recover mentally, but especially Eddie. He's had to do a lot of reading and research.
Eddie Zipper, thank you, sir. Matt, tell all of our fans where they get a hold of us on social media.
You can find us and go back and listen to all of our other podcasts. We've linked all those and also our social media content. We're Election and Beer on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Parler. And also, download our podcast on your favorite podcast app, listen to the latest episode, and then go back and listen to all the others. Even when the election's over, you can still learn a lot about the past and a lot about past elections and how they influence current and future elections. So do that, and then stay tuned. We've got something coming next. It's going to be a surprise. It's going to be great. We'll see you then.